Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. On Instagram as well, at Locked On Bulls. On Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Back from the weekend, Matt. And Matt, we got to make an announcement here first to our listeners. Unfortunately, it comes with great sadness that we're saying that Locked On Bulls is going to be no longer.
April Fools.
No, we're just kidding. It's April Fools. It's a terrible attempt at my April Fools joke. But no, in all seriousness, Matt, I had somebody on Twitter today, shout out to Ron on Twitter, part of the Bulls Twitter fam. This morning, I ran my first simulation in probably over a month on tankathon.com, hit the sim button once, and where do you think the Bulls went? Skyrocketed all the way to number one.
First, baby, that's what I'm talking about.
So I posted it, I'm like, with the little eye emojis, I'm like, ooh, you know, ooh, maybe that's signs to come. And then he said, you know, of course it comes on April Fool's Day. And I'm like, damn it, you're right. But Matt, how's it going? What's going on, dude? How are you doing back from the weekend?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? We are not, in fact, canceling Locked On Bulls. April Fool's.
Yes.
Weekend was good. Not because of that Bulls-Raptors game, which was virtually unwatchable. But Dave and John and I did a fun, like, guerrilla-style Outsiders episode from my couch after the game because NBC was fully booked with other stuff going on at the studio Saturday night. So that was fun. And we had some really awesome Sweet 16 and Elite 8 games happening, including, I mean, that Duke-Michigan State game was awesome. I know we're going to get to some of the NBA prospects from that game a little bit later. But, personally, it was kind of a bummer. I had Duke going all the way in my bracket. I never do that because I always pick Duke to lose because I don't like Duke. But this year, just because I wanted to see Zion play as many games as possible, I had them going all the way. But, man, credit to Michigan State. And I loved the clapback that everybody was giving to the haters who were saying, Tom Izzo is too mean to his players. Well, he holds his players accountable. And, yeah, sometimes that includes yelling at them when they screw up. And guess what? They just knocked out Duke and are in the Final Four. So congrats to Izzo and Sparty.
I was first in my bracket. First in my bracket out of 40 people. And then Duke falls. I had Texas Tech in my Final Four. I had Tennessee, which really hurts. And, you know, I felt like Tennessee could have given this Final Four a really good run. Shout out to Auburn, too, after losing one of their best players. And then overcoming Kentucky, too. Man.
Auburn is no joke, dude. They are good.
Oh, man. These were good Elite Eight games this weekend, though. No doubt about that. Yeah, the Virginia Tech game, too, with Duke. This was the weekend that I think made up for the first weekends of the college basketball tournament, and it was just like, those games were all right, but this was the excitement I think we were all looking for, and every game kind of went down to crunch time. But with that, we'll talk a little bit more about some prospects later in the episode, But let's get to some more Bulls pressing news with a couple of minutes on the opening show, Matt. Raptors and Bulls this weekend. For those few that maybe tuned into this game for at least a short while with baseball and the NCAA tournament going on, you got a chance to see Walter Lemon Jr. We had mentioned him on Thursday's episode last week that said, you know, don't be surprised if he ends up coming up and getting signed by the Bulls for the rest of the season. And also along with him, don't be surprised if Jakar Sampson gets signed. And sure enough, the Bulls signed him as well. So you'll see both of those guys. What did you think of Walt Lemon Jr.'s performance on Saturday, though, among everybody else that was out on that floor?
I mean, it was really awesome to see. You know, we got the great story, the scoop about how he shared the information that when he got the call from his agent that the Bulls were calling him up to finish the season, that he cried. I mean, it's a huge opportunity and a great accomplishment for him. This is a guy who, you know, had a couple of 10-day contracts with the Pelicans last year. He was on a two-way with Boston earlier this year. Neither of those worked out. Found his way onto the Windy City Bulls and was really the most consistent player on that Windy City Bulls team this year. He had a really strong playoff game when they lost in that, you know, one and done single elimination game against Westchester last week. He had 29-7-7. And because the Bulls are just so short on bodies, they call him up, and as a Chicago native, a Chicago kid, you know, it means a lot to him. And honestly, I was just tweeting earlier this morning about how the Cavs and Suns are in a big tankathon matchup tonight, in addition to Bulls Knicks playing, and how if the Cavs beat the G League Suns and the Bulls lose to the Knicks tonight, then there's only one win separating the Bulls from matching or the Cavs and the Bulls coming with the same win total into the final stretch of the season. And somebody already tweeted at me saying, like, I'm kind of scared that Walt Lemon Jr. is going to have a massive game and accidentally win this one for the Bulls. And I concur. I think, I mean, as far as people in a Bulls uniform, Walt Lemon immediately in Saturday night's loss to Toronto looked like a player who can play at the NBA level.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, granted, it was with a Raptors team that was missing Kyle Lowry, missing Kawhi Leonard. So we'll give him that. But nonetheless, coming up from the G League and then putting on a performance like he did for the Bulls, like, that step up didn't seem like he was totally lost, which, you know, a lot of guys who were called up from the G League and come into these games kind of seem like they've got a little bit of stars in their eyes. Like, sometimes the pressure and the stage seems a little bit too bright for them. It didn't seem like that at all for Walt Lemon, so excited for him and excited for his story, like you had said. And it was cool to hear his reactions too, and said, like, honestly, signing this contract, I cried. So good story to see. I don't think he's going to stick around beyond this season. This was just kind of one of those things that, one of those things that you see at the end of the season that the Bulls will do.
I mean, as you said, Jordan, he came in pretty seamlessly. We're still waiting on word. We've heard that he might actually even start tonight against the Knicks. Came off the bench Saturday against Toronto, but played 31 minutes, which was more than every starter except Shaq Harrison, who played 32. And it's kind of like you were saying, like, he played within himself. He played, you know, a very competent game. He finished 8 of 15 from the field, got to the free throw line 5 times, dished out 6 assists, grabbed 4 rebounds, 4 steals, a block. And here's the big one to me. A guy, as you said, some people get called up, they get a little starry-eyed, they try and do too much, or they kind of shy away from it. Not only did he score 19 points, which was the Bulls' team high on the night, but as I said, 6 assists, 1 turnover. 6 assists to 1 turnover. That's a better assist to turnover ratio than we've ever seen from Chris Dunn. It's a better assist to turnover ratio than we've seen from pretty much any of the merry-go-round of backup point guards the Bulls have thrown out there over the last 3 seasons. In his first game with the Bulls being brought up, he played very clean, very smart basketball.
So good for him. It'll be cool to see him kind of ride this out for the last, 5 games that the Bulls have. Bulls play the Knicks tonight, by the way. Come on. Come on.
Come on!
Why they gotta schedule this on April Fool's Day? Like, that could be a whole nother episode, but seriously, Bulls and Knicks tonight on April Fool's Day. But beyond that, Matt, I wanted to have one conversation with you quickly before we kind of turn our attention to March Madness and some of the prospects there and some other storylines that have come out this weekend. shout out to Casey Johnson. He put up a poll that I thought was kind of interesting this weekend, asking, you know, if you had to choose between two players on this team to keep this summer, who would it be, Ryan Arcidiacono or Wayne Seldon? I'd like to throw another player into that mix. If you had to keep one player on this team on a relatively cheap contract, Ryan Arcidiacono, Wayne Seldon, or Shaq Harrison, one of those three guys, who were you picking and why? Because Shaq Harrison, another night where I didn't think he, you know, the box score will say what it is, and the Raptors are a good team, but he had 15 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, and only one turnover. He was 6 for 15 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3, and he was a minus 20 in the plus minus, but granted, think about who was playing out there with him again. But the month of March has been really good to Shaq Harrison, and also on the defensive side. So I was telling you, I think he's making it really difficult for the Bulls in terms of deciding between Archie and him and who to keep and who not to keep. So out of those three guys, if you had to pick one of them, who would you like to see most back with the Bulls next season?
Between Archie, Shaq, and Seldon?
Yes.
I mean, it's a tough call. And I think as much as Bulls fans have kind of, you know, fallen for Archie, at least some of them, because, you know, he kind of reminds us of the second coming of Kirk Heinrich, you know, a scrappy point guard who's a good backup. He's not very athletic, but, he, you know, he makes the hustle plays, he takes charges and all that kind of thing. Shaq Harrison does a lot of the same stuff, and it used to be that, like, well, Archie actually started this season shooting the ball pretty well from downtown, but he fell off hard. And that's always been the biggest knock on Shaq Harrison, is that the guy can't shoot. As you said, 0 of 3 from downtown last night. Archie did go 2 of 4 against Toronto from behind the three-point line. But, like, to me, you talk about the fact that they're both, you know, fairly smart players. They limit their turnovers, and they make their difference felt on the defensive end. And Shaq Harrison has more bounce. Shaq Harrison, I think, is a little bit better at attacking the basket. You see some of his explosiveness sometimes that Archie doesn't quite have. Now, Archie's crafty and finds good look for his teammates sometimes, maybe a little bit better of a distributor than Shaq is, but to me, the wild card is Seldon, because much like the other two, he's a little bit limited offensively, not a great shooter, but can make the right play on the offensive end. And, you know, outside of Otto Porter's arrival, to me, the smartest player on this team all season long has been Wayne Seldon. He makes the right reads and he makes the right plays, and he plays within the system and does so effectively. And to me, I think has a little bit more versatility and stretch on the defensive end when you're talking about guarding multiple positions. So, like, it's a real tough question, but I think I might lean towards Seldon, and I would probably put Shaq second and Archie third. What about you?
Yeah, this is tough. Like, if you asked me maybe at the beginning of February, I was on board with Wayne Seldon Jr., no doubt about it, and the other two, I would say thanks for the contributions. You can go somewhere else, and I think you'll end up on a roster. Now it's been more difficult, though. You think about the Bulls' point guard position. You think about the needs that are there. You also think about, too, the lottery positioning. Like, if the Bulls don't end up in the top three, they end up taking a wing or whatever they decide to do at the top of the lottery, you're kind of clogged there. Reality is, you're going to have Valentine come back unless they move him. You're going to have Hutchison. You have Porter. You're going to have your draft pick come in. You got LaVine. So you got five guys right there already that can play the two or the three. Where's the room for Wayne Seldon at that point, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of, like, as much of an impact that I think he can have on this team, it's like, at some point, you need to give other guys an opportunity to see where they're at. And I just don't know if his fit here makes sense, because I don't think he's going to get a lot of playing time at this point. Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono, I think, are a good argument, though. You need backup point guards. And with Chris Dunn trying to figure out what they're going to do this summer with him, If he comes back still, Shaq Harrison has shown that he can play the one or the two. And I mean, Jim Boylan has even experimented with him at the three. I don't suggest that it's a good idea, but
yeah, no, it's never ideal when we've tried to trot out those super small ball lineups and Shaq's at the three. It does not go well.
But credit to Shaq, at least he can play defense on most of these pretty good offensive players, and we've seen that. Same thing with Seldon, though. He has been asked and manned some of the best secondary players, and even when he started, he's been asked to man some of the best offensive players on other teams. So I think the decision's tough. Shaq Harrison has had a really good month of March. Maybe that's going to increase his value in free agency. If it was up to me, though, I would seriously consider Shaq Harrison over the other two guys, Ryan Arcidiacono and Wayne Seldon. But maybe Shaq Harrison's already priced himself out of where the Bulls want to spend on a reserve guard or another reserve player.
Well,
so
and that's,
I think I would rank it.
Go ahead.
Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono, Wayne Seldon at this point.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, as you said, it kind of will depend on what we add in the draft, and that might have a bigger impact on who stays and who goes. So it's kind of speculation right now. And, you know, obviously the free agency decisions and who the Bulls want to bring back, if anybody, those decisions will come after the draft happens in June and once free agency starts in July. So you're right. It is all of a sudden a little crowded at that wing spot, which might mean that Seldon won't be around. But then you also, you know, the other point you brought up, which is very important, is what happens with Chris Dunn. I know a lot of Bulls fans would like to see the Bulls try and deal him in some kind of draft night trade, whether it's in a attempt to move up, which I think, as we talked about last week, is a futile effort in my opinion. I don't think it's likely to package Dunn in order to move up. I think it would take a lot more than that, or maybe packaging him in a trade to trade down if the Bulls don't like where they are and what's on the board in order to acquire an additional asset. So if neither of those things happen and Dunn is around and the Bulls still decide that they want to bring in a veteran point guard to be their starter, or at least challenge Dunn for that starting spot in training camp, but still very much plan on keeping Dunn around, then do you want to keep Archie and or Shaq as like the third point guard at the end of the rotation? It's certainly possible, and if they do add a wing in the draft, then maybe it's more likely that happens than it is to keep Seldon. So, like I said, I mean, I feel like we're going to get a better idea of what's to come with those guys once we know who they add in the draft.
Agreed with you, and I think, too, it comes at 50%, too. It's 50% do the Bulls want them, and it's also 50% what are the other players getting, too, as far as offers? And what's the other team's positioning? Can Shaq Harrison get more minutes somewhere else on a better different team than as opposed to maybe if he sticks around with the Bulls and sees his minutes decrease and he's just kind of a reserve guy here? Same thing with Arcidiacono. How many other teams are going to be interested in him? Same thing with Seldon. And just another thing real quick on Seldon. I still think he was, when I said it back in February when they made the trade with Portis and Parker, I said he's going to be the biggest victim of them all. His stats are going to go down. He's going to suffer because he's going to have to play with that second unit now with Otto Porter getting into that lineup. And sure enough, that's kind of what we've seen over the last 2 months, over the last 25 games or so. So I'm not completely out on Seldon at all. I just think that there's a clog now going into next season. It'll be interesting, man. I think that's for sure. One thing on Jakarr Sampson really fast is he got signed this weekend. He played 6 games in China earlier this season, was with the Windy City Bulls when they claimed him early on in the season, went over there, played in the same league as like guys like Jimmer Fredette and Jared Sullinger is over there playing, and a handful of other NBA names. Stephon Marbury still playing in that league. He was averaging like 22-11 over in China. And then in the G League with the Windy City Bulls, he was averaging 21-9. So I don't know. We'll see. It's just one of those things where the Bulls just need bodies at this point. And I think this is more so than anything, maybe good faith the Bulls are trying to play here as far as promoting some of their G League guys to the roster and kind of help them out on their way back to the NBA. What did you think about the Bulls promoting 2 G League guys on top of the 2 other two-way guys that they promoted?
Well, I mean, yeah, at this point, it's mostly about necessity. It is nice to see them reward guys that have been working hard in their G League program as opposed to going out and bringing in some, you know, some random other player off the streets. But, it to me is not a huge factor for what happens next. Like, I don't envision Jakarr Sampson or Walt Lemon Jr. sticking around long term. If anything, I would be intrigued to see them at least give Walt Lemon Jr. some kind of opportunity, a tryout of some kind this summer. Because honestly, as I said, watching him play in that game against Toronto, he looked way more competent than a lot of backup point guards I've seen in a Bulls jersey recently. Not just this year, but in the last several years. So I guess I would say I would be more interested to see the Bulls look closer at him than at Jakarr Sampson. But as far as bringing G League guys up, I mean, basically 70% of what was supposed to be your active roster has now been shelved for the remainder of the season. And you got to dress at least, what's the minimum, eight guys?
Yeah, eight.
So, yeah, at some point, I guess it's good that the Windy City Bulls season came to an end, because there's a real necessity to just trot some of these other guys out there just so the Bulls can kind of, you know, wind out the clock.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. There's been some other people too bringing up the fact that just cross our fingers that this isn't going beyond good faith with the players, that it's not some deals going on with agents. And I'm looking one specifically at the agent of like Brandon Sampson and a few of those other guys that are getting promoted, because that agent who's got four Windy City players, they have all been on the Bulls now at one point or another. Three of them are currently on the Bulls, and then Kaiser Gates is still down with the Windy City Bulls. One of his top players is Terry Rozier, who's going to be a free agent this summer, and I want nothing to do with that contract. I'll just put that out there right now, clear and simple.
No.
So.
No. I think a lot of people were really high on him after Boston made their playoff run last year, because he played pretty well, but he's had a really rough season, and I think that some team out there might overreach to try and pry him away from Boston, and I think that would be a mistake, and I do not want the Bulls to be the team that makes that mistake. What's up, Locked On Bulls Nation? Matt here with a message from Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD picture quality, images so clear you won't miss a single thing. Also a night vision feature and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products accessible to everyone. You can check on your home anytime with Wyze's app's live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. And that includes live streaming with an 8x digital zoom. The possibilities and uses for Wyze Cam are endless. Yes, it can serve as a great nanny cam for all of you parents out there. But what about bachelors like me? Sitting in the living room watching the game, you got dinner cooking on the stove, and you don't want to go back and forth between the living room and the kitchen 10 times during the game just to check on dinner. Put a Wyze Cam on your coffee table, bam. You can keep an eye on whatever's simmering on that stove of yours without having to bother to get up and go to and from the kitchen while the game is on. That's my kind of product right there. Improving my quality of life as a sports fan. And for just $10 more, Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. And here's the best part. Not only does it work with your mobile phone from anywhere, it also is compatible with Alexa. For all of you in-home smart speaker users out there, like me, Wyze Cam compatible with Alexa. Boom. This product is amazing. Go to Wyze.com. That's Wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price on your Wyze Cam today. That's Wyze.com, Wyze/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Life moves fast. Your in-home camera should too.
Switch our focus now. Let's go to the tournament real fast, Matt. A lot of freak out about RJ Barrett in the last couple of minutes in that game yesterday, and I wanted to get your thoughts on him. Just beyond what he did there in that last 90 seconds, which I don't know if you blame it more on RJ Barrett, if you blame it more on Coach K for not running sets for Zion, whatever you decide on that, watching him play, if the Bulls land at four and say Jarrett Culver, Ja Morant, and Zion are all off the board and the Bulls got to decide, are you taking Barrett? What have you thought about his game overall in the tournament? And have you changed your opinion at all on him? And what kind of did you see over this weekend that maybe have changed your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was a rough one for RJ, and I think he got a lot of heat from people that thought that all Duke needed to do was get the ball in Zion's hands down the stretch, and Duke would have pulled out another close win, and that might be true. And not only did you see him kind of mess up his situation at the free throw line, miss the first one, and then tried to miss the second one so that they could get a rebound, but he accidentally made it, and then that coupled with the fact that Duke had not put Michigan State in the bonus yet mean that Michigan State could essentially run out the clock. So it wasn't all on RJ Barrett, but I think and I saw somebody had a stat on Twitter that like over the three games that Duke lost all season long, RJ Barrett shot 0-for-9 in the combined final minutes of those games, and that Zion only had one shot in those three losses in the final minute when RJ Barrett was 0-for-9. So I think there is something to be said that's real about criticizing RJ Barrett and his lack of court vision and awareness, because certainly one of his plays where he drove and got some contact in the lane, couldn't finish. If people went back and watched the replay, Zion was making a great cut trailing, and if he had just dumped it off to Zion, if he had seen him, likely you're talking about a Zion dunk, maybe a Zion dunk and one that could have drastically changed the outcome of that game. Same thing with RJ Barrett chucking up a three. So I think some of the knocks on RJ Barrett are valid. And I get a lot of different opinions from people. Some people are really high on him and saying that, the criticisms are way overblown. I tend to lean towards those who are saying his NBA ceiling might not be that high because he has to realize that his best skills could be as a facilitator and not as a primary shoot first, score first kind of player, which is what he tries to be too often this season with Duke. So to me, the court vision is a real issue with him. I think as of right now, it limits his NBA ceiling. And if as you said, no Zion, no Ja, and no Culver, I might take a look at Kobe White over RJ Barrett recently, or I'd probably not DeAndre Hunter, maybe, but honestly, the way Kobe White played, I given what the Bulls are looking for, I might take him over RJ Barrett.
Yeah, it's kind of a toss up at this point at four, especially if Jarrett Culver's off the board. But look, it really depends on the teams too. If it works out perfectly the way that it's set up right now, if the Knicks get one, if Phoenix gets two, you get Zion and Ja going 1-2. Cleveland gets three. It kind of makes sense that Cleveland would still take a chance on RJ. It seems like that makes sense the most for Cleveland. Jarrett Culver makes sense there too. So that would be interesting, and his stock continues to rise, and now him being in the tournament for another weekend, I think will only make his stock even rise even faster. The couple things on RJ Barrett that I had was, one, he did knock down that big three at the end. That kept Duke in that game, so that was huge on his part. But then he got, like you were saying, kind of some tunnel vision, and it wasn't even on offensive plays. I went back, and shout out to one of the people on Twitter and college basketball Twitter. They pulled some clips from games in January and February of RJ Barrett where he kind of got lost on defense. And that's where it kind of scares me. And it's also, all of a sudden, I start to think, if you pair him alongside with guys like Zach LaVine, guys like Lauri Markkanen, who aren't particularly very good defenders right now, especially Zach LaVine, especially on the perimeter, just coming off of picks, not really knowing where he needs to be at times, and very tunnel visioned at that point, that kind of tends to scare me a lot. And then also, too, in the big moments, like we saw yesterday, he went to hero ball. And I don't know if that's more on Coach K or if that's sort of on RJ Barrett, of both deserve kind of the blame there. But, not running plays through your best guy on the floor, that's cause for concern for at least for me. And that's not things that you can't learn. RJ Barrett can learn those things throughout the NBA, but some of the things do kind of scare me about him as a prospect. And, you know, his free throw percentage too wasn't all that great, watching him miss a couple clutch free throws. So there is some nitpicking that you can do, but I think defensively, that's my biggest worry about him is, like, even on that last play, you know, I watched him. He was pointing around. He was like, it looked like he had no idea where he needed to be. And then all of a sudden he gets paired on Cassius Winston on the fastest guard on the floor. Why was he paired on him at that point? He's like, it just looked like he was confused. So that would be my biggest knock on him right now is he doesn't look like he knows where he needs to be on defense like 75% of the time. And you can see it even throughout the regular season.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's also fair to question that element to his game, which is honestly, you know, something everybody wants to look at the, you know, the explosive players, especially the explosive players on the offensive end. When you're talking about draft prospects, those are the sexy ones. Those are the ones that the teams and fans all want to be going after. And a lot of the time, the defensive limitations of those players gets kind of glossed over when you're talking about their overall skill level, their overall floors and ceilings as NBA players. And that's a fair one to look at for RJ Barrett. And also when you talk about the context of how he would fit into this Bulls roster, which is young and still developing, but there are a lot of defensive holes on this Bulls roster right now. A lot of one-way players. We've gotten rid of a couple of them. Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis, both one-way players who were sieves on the defensive end. But you still have the defensive limitations of Zach LaVine, who got a little bit better this season, but is still not great. You know, Markkanen still trying to learn how to be a better rim protector and shot blocker who can also step out and guard a little bit at the perimeter, how to handle pick and roll situations defensively. Adding a non-plus defensive player in the drafts, like, I feel like it's not inevitable, but certainly likely when you look at some of the top tier talent in this draft. But heck, Zion Williamson makes an incredible, awe-inspiring play on the defensive end for every single dunk he has that blows us away. So there are some two-way players in this draft. There just aren't many of them. And I would say RJ Barrett's defensive question marks are definitely valid.
I agree with that. And look, he's still got a high ceiling on him too. And a lot of this stuff can be fixed, and it's not saying he can't grow. But these are just some of the concerns coming into a team that, you know, some of the weaknesses on this Bulls team. So it's things to kind of factor in. And I know people are already labeling him as like the next Andrew Wiggins and some of these other things. I don't know if I want to go that far with him, but clearly you can see, like, there's going to be things he needs to work on. And also, to the three-point shot, it's not as consistent as we once maybe thought at the beginning of the year, too. So that's also something that might be a little bit more concerning. That's why I have, like, DeAndre Hunter a little bit farther up on my board than maybe some other people, is because I know what I'm going to get on the defensive side of the ball right away. And, you know, a lot of scouts, a lot of coaches will tell you, like, shooting, you can figure that out last. You can hire some of the best shooting coaches out there to kind of fix that. And we've seen some players struggle with that have gone in the top of the lottery. So there's cases for everybody. But I like DeAndre Hunter's game. I like Jarrett Culver a lot. And you even brought up Coby White, Darius Garland, too, somebody else not to forget about. So there are names, and that's why I was more curious about some of these prospects that may fall out of the top three. And if the Bulls end up at four, what this decision might be there. It'll be, it's going to be curious. Let's get to a couple other things, though. Besides the tournament, RJ Barrett was the one that I wanted to talk about most. Fred Hoiberg officially signed to Nebraska. 7-year deal at $25 million.
Seven years, yeah.
Getting paid at Nebraska. He's a Cornhusker now. So the Bulls are off of roughly $3.5 million to the $5 million they owe him for next season. Does it change your thoughts at all, Matt, on what the Bulls are going to do with their coaching situation this summer?
I don't think it changes my thoughts on what they will do, which is I have begrudgingly come around to the reality that based on everything we've heard, based on, you know, a few whispers I've heard here and there, that Jim Boylan will absolutely be back next year. And does Fred Hoiberg being hired by Nebraska and offsetting $3.5 million of the remaining $5 million that the Bulls owe him, should that change the Bulls' thought process on perhaps putting some feelers out there to see who might be interested to coach this Bulls team? I think it should change things. You know, for all the talk that Bulls fans, you know, say about the Reinsdorfs and, oh, you're so cheap and, you know, it's cash considerations is all that you're focused on. And, you know, before the Otto Porter trade happened, we got a couple of those deals with Houston and a couple with OKC, where it was basically the Bulls just doing a little bit of bookkeeping and making some money. And so that narrative got played out even more this season. And people believe that the Reinsdorfs are too cheap to pay three coaches next season, firing Fred Hoiberg, firing Jim Boylan, paying them their guaranteed deals, and then paying and hiring a third coach. I would say that it's, you know, it's not because they're cheap, but it's because for whatever reason, the Reinsdorfs and John Paxson are all very much on board with Jim Boylan being the right guy to lead them into the third year of this rebuild. Even if Hoiberg didn't get this Nebraska job and they owed him $5 million, I still think with all of the money that this organization makes, it would have been in their best interest. It would be in their best interest still to execute a somewhat on the DL coaching search to see if any other interested people are out there who they deem to be a good fit for this young roster and their organization. Because I'm sorry, as much as we maybe were a little too hard on Boylan right at the get-go, and maybe not everything was entirely his fault when this season almost exploded way out of control, I still have serious doubts about his coaching at the NBA level. I have serious doubts about players buying into his hard-edged philosophy. And I think that the Bulls should execute an actual, honest-to-God, coaching search. Because we didn't get one when they hired Fred. Their coaching search was, hey, we like this guy Fred. We like Iowa State. Let's do that. And Gar said that to John, and John said, okay, fine. Now, Jim Boylan is John's guy, and John really has the most say here, and the Reinsdorfs trust John Paxson blindly, so that's why Jim's going to be back. And I don't think Fred getting a Nebraska job changes anything, although it probably should.
It's a good point. Regardless of how anybody else feels about Boylan, I think it's more so the impact, and what we need to focus on is how the Bulls feel about what he's doing. And I roll my eyes at it, but we talked about it. The way that we listened to John Paxson talk at the deadline, and you know, even you said it, you know, maybe we were a little bit harsh on Boylan at the beginning. And some of that was warranted. I felt like most of it was warranted. And then we gave him credit for what happened in February. And obviously things are a little easier to talk about, and it's easier to dole out credit when players are playing the way that they should and games are stacking up and you're actually winning games. I think just now, though, going into the month of March, and then you see these guys kind of depleted and you see all the injuries kind of stack up, and you see things kind of just regress and go back to the way that they were in the end of December and into January, it makes me have guesses again. It's like, was that kind of just a mirage back in February? And was it because of the schedule? And was it because Markkanen and Levine just exploded for great months coming off of the rest that they had at the All-Star break? You know, those are all valid questions. I agree with you, though. I think I have a ton of questions about his long-term ability to get this team to the next level. And I don't know why the Bulls don't see that, or at least aren't asking them those questions, and maybe they just don't care at this point. I mean, maybe they feel like that they're further along, they're further away from the next step than some Bulls fans feel, at least we feel. Then maybe they're going to ride this out, or maybe they just truly feel Jim Boylan is the guy and there's nobody else out there that they feel like they can get. And I think that's, like you said, a disservice to this rebuild overall. So I think this money should have an impact on it. They said money's not part of this, but you know, you look at everything, all the moves that the Bulls have made in recent history, it kind of says that money does have some type of impact to this. So,
and the other thing with Jim Boylan is something that we talked about a little bit more over the last couple of weeks, is this this behavior and the things he does at the end of games that are well in hand for either team that are kind of annoying opposing players and opposing coaches who won't even give Jim Boylan the courtesy of a nod or a quick handshake or a wave at the end of a game because Jim Boylan ticked them off by doing something that is considered breaking an unwritten rule as far as how you operate at the end of a game. And in particular, these things like, you know, calling late timeouts to draw up a play when one team has a double-digit lead and there are 30 seconds left. Those kinds of things, coupled with the way that the team responded to Boylan's shock and awe coaching style when he took over, and the mutiny stuff, and the hard practices, and the push-ups, and the wind sprints, and all this that maybe was a little bit overblown the way the media reported it, and the way that John Paxson said that was totally overblown and falsely reported and misleading. It doesn't matter if it is overblown or falsely reported. It's out there. And that, coupled with the stuff that players around the league can clearly see as far as what Jim Boylan does that a lot of people would call Bush League behavior, do players want to come play for a coach like that? You know, there's a difference between Tom Izzo yelling at his collegiate players and motivating them the right way and the specific things that we have seen and heard Boylan do. There's a difference there because, you know, I was coming to Tom Izzo's defense earlier on the show, just like I did last week. And you might say, well, that's like Jim Boylan and Tom Izzo are just doing the same things. They're hard coaches. They yell at their play. No, there's a difference. It may be a subtle difference, but there's a difference. And NBA players who have a choice of, hey, I'm a free agent. Where do I want to go play? Take my pick. Would look at the Bulls and say, Jim Boylan's still their coach? I don't know if I want to subject myself to that. And that is a very real concern and one of, you know, a few reasons why I think it would be in the team's best interest to conduct a search and see if they can't find anybody better. Because as much as we want to believe in the young core, we know that this team still needs a star power player. And we're hoping that LaVine and or Markkanen develop into that kind of player. But the best way to get those players still it's convincing one to come in free agency, and the Bulls haven't been able to do it. And will it hinder their chances to do so if Jim Boylan is still their coach? And I think that answer is resounding yes.
I think you bring up a great point, too, in they still need their star player, but on top of that, you need a coach to elevate your star player and get them to that next level. Take a look at Milwaukee, right? Before they had Budenholzer, where were they with Giannis? Like, Giannis was still developing, but still, that team was weird, and they didn't get to the point where we all thought that they were going to get to under Kidd and under Prunty. As soon as Budenholzer got in there, they're one of the best teams in the entire league. Like, we're talking about Giannis having an MVP season. We're talking about them being a contender, legit contender for the finals. And then you also go and look at the Pelicans. Like, they've had coaching problems too, and they haven't been able to figure it out with Anthony Davis and the pieces around there. So I think coaching matters. Like, it does, as far as philosophy, as far as what you're doing in game and how you're getting players to buy in. That still has a huge impact on how you get your team to the next level. And you can look at a bunch of different examples around the league. I brought up Milwaukee and the Pelicans. You can look at a handful of other places too, just in recent history. So I agree with you on that, so we'll see. I think it's going to get interesting in the next few weeks here as we kind of wind down and then we hear from Paxson and Foreman and whoever else is going to speak at their end of the season press conference and how they're going to go about this in the off season. But yeah, I would just say I wouldn't be too surprised if Boylan's back and maybe some things get different if the Bulls end up winning the lottery and maybe they decide to go a different course there. If they don't, then maybe Boylan is back and it's the wheels keep spinning. Last thing, Matt, I've got for you was listening to the Low Post podcast. Him and Zach Lowe and Ryan Russillo were just going through their awards, going through all NBA. We were going through most improved player. They also quickly just talked about Anthony Davis really fast. And to my surprise, they were talking about a surprise team this summer.
The hot prediction du jour among GMs and front office people, and this is not reporting. Like, I hate when people report, oh, people on other teams think X, Y, and Z, as if that's news. That's just gossip. Okay, so I'm just the smart guy. Gossip is there's going to be a surprise team that we're not even thinking about that comes out and rolls the dice. Now, some of those people mean the Knicks, which is not a surprise team.
It's not a surprise.
If the Knicks get a top two pick, number one gets interesting. That's not a surprise. I don't know who the surprise team would be. I haven't been able to sort of put my finger on like
Chicago.
I don't see it.
I'm just telling you what I had heard at the beginning of this odyssey.
Yeah, no, because like he's that from was, there, and that's
no. It wasn't even that. Like I'm talking some of the rumblings, the people that knew what was going on with him. Like I've still to this day, his father has more of a problem with Boston than Anthony Davis ever did. His father wants him here in L.A., and that's why the father has said the things about the Celtics that he said. But that Davis is far more open to it, but he's not going to be as open to it if Kyrie bounces. But Chicago was one of those teams. I also felt like, too, like some of the sourcing on the Anthony Davis stuff was basically, you know, the whispers of let's not make this so obvious that it's only the Lakers. So I don't know if right. I, you know, being told, hey, maybe Chicago, maybe Houston, maybe this other stuff. I'm like, is this even real or is this just let's make
well,
sure the
for
list
Chicago's is purposes, like, so just say you to get Anthony Davis, you have to trade marketing.
Yeah, right.
You might have to trade Carter. You got to trade your best stuff. So I'm like, what is he staying there to play with? Like, I'm going to have Zach LaVine not pass to me and take shitty 20 footers and play no defense. And that's like going to be the carrot. And like Chris Dunn is maybe a backup point guard, not a starter. Like that's what's going to get me to stay. So who knows?
I think the most important thing that I got out of it was, what do you have to give up in order to get him? And Zach Lowe said, starting right off the bat, you have to give up Markkanen and you have to give up your first round pick. Like, there's no doubt about it. You're going to have to give up your best pieces for Davis. So I just wanted to throw that out there to you. I was surprised to hear that still going into the summer. Not saying that anything's going to happen, but I was just, it made me perk up for a minute, at least when they started to talk about it for like the 3 minutes that they said it.
Yeah, I listened to that same conversation between Lowe and Russillo as well, and was a bit surprised to see them talking about it like it was still in play, at least as an outside chance that the Bulls might look to get involved with Anthony Davis talks this summer, because now the Pelicans, having refused to trade him at the deadline, now will have to listen to their best offers. And I would imagine they try and get this settled up before the draft, especially if they have a few players on their board that they really like that they would want to move up to get. As opposed to waiting until next season's deadline to deal Davis. So maybe the Bulls are at least interested in having a couple of phone calls with the Pelicans to see what it would take. But I agree with them. I think there's no way in hell the Bulls even get a courtesy call back if they leave a voicemail offering anything short of Markkanen and their first round pick. Potentially even Markkanen, this year's pick and a future first, maybe protected. But you know, I think, again, this goes back to what we were talking about last week with Bulls fans trying to, you know, just fantasize about these wildly lowball offers when they talk about trading Bulls assets to either move up in the draft or get a star player like Anthony Davis, and some of these proposals and packages that wouldn't come close to getting it done. And that, I think, is the reality. Do you want to mortgage your future of Markkanen and whatever talent you would add in this year's lottery for what might end up being 1 year of Anthony Davis? Because, you know, I'm not sure exactly what Zach Lowe and Ryan Russillo have heard, but the latest we heard from Brian Windhorst is that it's the least kept secret in the league that Anthony Davis has zero interest playing for the Bulls. Doesn't want to play for his hometown team. Whatever the reasons, we can speculate as to the reasons, but he does not want to play for the Bulls. So if you don't get a guarantee and a promise from Anthony Davis in a trade that, after this season, or you know, even before the season starts, we can work out a contract extension, I'll commit to you long term, are you willing to give up Markkanen and your lottery pick for the off chance that you're getting Anthony Davis on a 1 year loan? And there's no guarantee that Anthony Davis can even get this team to the playoffs for one year.
I need an extension if I'm trading Markkanen.
You need the extension to trade him, and I don't think that happens.
That's where I start. Like, if I'm going to have to reside to the fact that I'm trading Markkanen and our first round pick this year, I need that extension done immediately. Like, and you can also too factor in that they still have Otto Porter, and that can match salaries maybe a little bit easier than some of the other players. And you could talk about trading Porter and Carter in your first round pick, and maybe that's enticing. But I think hearing it from guys like Zach Lowe, who's the most one of the most tapped in people in all of the NBA, say that you've got to start with your best stuff, and Markkanen is your best stuff. Markkanen in your first round pick, that's where you're at. That's literally where you're at. And you have other teams calling around the league, and, you know, Boston could be in play. And if they have to trade Jason Tatum to get this deal done and they really want Anthony Davis, you're talking about competing with that. Like, they're willing to give up Tatum. You got to be willing to give up Markkanen. You look at LA, they're willing to give up Ingram, Ball, and a collection of other pieces. Like, you've got
everything. Yeah, they're willing to give up everything.
You
got to
give up your best pieces in order to get him. But that's where I'm at. If I'm trading our first round pick and Markkanen, or if I'm trading our first round pick and Carter and plus whatever, he's got to sign an extension. Otherwise, I don't want to take that gamble, because then you're resetting yourself back. I don't even know how many years. You're back to the beginning, right?
You're essentially... Yeah, you are. I mean, at least I guess the Wolves still have Towns, and, you know, I mean, Wiggins' contract, they don't even want that at this point. But when they gambled and brought in Jimmy, and Jimmy said, "I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be reunited with Tibbs. He's my guy. You know, we've been through a lot together. I trust him." And didn't take all that long for Jimmy Butler to say, "Nah, this ain't it. I want out. Let me out." And it turned into a giant headache and a giant PR catastrophe for the Timberwolves, because they went out and mortgaged a lot to get that star. And that star got them to the playoffs for the first time, whatever it was. They had like a, you know, a 14 or 15 year playoff drought in Minnesota, and they squeaked in by winning their 82nd regular season game to get the 8th seed, and then were bounced in the first round. Was that worth giving up LaVine, Dunn, and the rights to Lauri Markkanen? You know, I'm sure Tibbs believed in that move at the time, but Glenn Taylor, I'm guessing, is pretty upset about that at this point.
Yeah.
So the Bulls would be doing something similar by making a deal for Davis without the guarantee and the extension when that deal is done. Sign, like, the trade is done, you sign that day or the very next day, get it done. And based on everything we've heard, that there is no reality in which that happens. So, no, I'm not doing it.
It's a good point. Speaking of the Timberwolves, as we get out of here, Matt, there's only two players in NBA history that have averaged, in their first two seasons, at least 16 points, 8 rebounds, and shot over 36% from three-point range combined in their first two seasons. Those two players, Karl Anthony Towns and Lauri Markkanen. So, boy, would the Timberwolves love to have both of those dudes right now. I mean, they got one of them, but imagine if they wouldn't have made that deal for Jimmy, and they would have Lowry right now. Ooh. So,
yeah, remarkable.
That's pretty crazy, though. Like, the only two dudes in the entire NBA to average those numbers, going all the way back to 1946, 47, and I know it's a new age where big men are shooting threes at a ridiculous rate now, but Cat and Lowry started in their first two seasons, averaging better than 36% and still averaging 16 and 8. And look, Cat too was only averaging 2.23 point attempts per game. Lowry's averaging 6.1 through his first two seasons. So
yeah,
that's even a little bit more impressive.
And I think Markkanen coming back from that elbow injury, and then also his whatever caused the shooting slump in March, whether it was he was just, you know, fighting the, you know, the flu-like symptoms and the fatigue that first struck all the way back on March 1st in that quadruple overtime game. Couple that with the elbow and the rust on his shooting form when he came back, and the fact that it's 36, yeah, it's not bad. And he and you know, Towns are the only ones to do that, as you said, while averaging 18 and 6, and that's great. But I think Markkanen's 3-point percentage is going up. You know, at 36, I think is a little low for what he can be as a three-point shooter in the NBA, and he just kind of had a bumpy sophomore campaign. And you can absolutely expect to see that three-point percentage go up next year if he's healthy. I think, you know, I would make that bet. Does Markkanen finish with 36 or above, or 36 or below from behind the three-point line next season in year 3? I'd take the over.
Yeah, I would take the over, too. Think about it. Porter, LaVine, how well they played together in February, and then you're getting a full season of that, too. I mean, that's the one thing the Bulls never had with Markkanen out on the floor is another legit three-point threat. And if Otto Porter can continue being that next season and beyond, plus whatever you get in the draft, too, if you're going to get a decent three-point threat, plus whatever you get in free agency, that can only help Markkanen as far as spacing at the three-point line. And that's been part of the problem. I think Lowry's felt like he needs to be the guy that shoots threes. Otherwise, nobody else on this team is going to do it. So I agree with you. And maybe we see the attempts per game dip slightly a little bit, but then you see the three-point percentage rise up a little bit. And I think he'll just get better attempts and more open shots with better three-point shooters around him. So let's cross our fingers and hope for that. But I thought that was a cool stat. Him and Karl-Anthony Towns, good company to have over their first two seasons. So
absolutely.
With that said, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Hit us up on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to the show, the Himalaya app, brand new app. Go to your app store on Android or iOS. Download that app. It's fantastic. If you're looking for a new service, if you want to be able to get your podcasts in a different way, Himalaya is the place to do that. So get our podcast there, subscribe there, along with Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere you get podcasts, subscribe to the show. So make sure you do that so you're getting Locked On Bulls immediately when our episodes drop. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Enjoy Bulls and Knicks tonight. Maybe, sort of. I don't know. I guess you can enjoy it. Maybe. We'll find out. I don't know. It's April Fool's Day, so let's just, yeah. I'll leave it up to you guys if you guys are going to pay attention or not. But we will be. So come back tomorrow on Tuesday's episode, and we'll break it all down and do a bunch of other things on tomorrow's episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are saying we are out of here. Have a great night. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.